Word is that today President Obama is going to nominate former Procter & Gamble executive Robert McDonald to be Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. Are you familiar with him at all?
You know, honestly, I've read a little bit about him in the news over the years, read some stories yesterday afternoon and today that they anticipated that announcement. Sounds like someone who has the right kind and level of experience. I think that this is the kind of person, someone coming from really outside the system with significant business experience, and I think having that experience is exactly what we need to get the VA back on track.
What should his first priority be, considering all of the problems the VA faces?
I hope that he focuses on what it takes to get the standard of care in VA institutions up to speed. And that's very broad because I think it encompasses not only the timeliness of the care, but also the quality of the care. And we've heard, I think, horror stories about both.
Bill Owens, we also saw recently the Sanders-McCain Access to Care Bill introduced. That also includes access to non-Veterans Administration facilities, which is something that you've been advocating. How important will that bill be as it hopefully moves through the House and Senate, and do you see it getting passed at all?
I think it has an excellent chance of passage. I think many people are concerned about this. The idea that we're going to see a greater number of veterans arising out of Iraq and Afghanistan is certainly something which has come to pass. We have clear evidence of that. I think that instead of building additional VA facilities, we need to be allowing veterans to take advantage of the facilities in their home communities. This is something which, as you said, Pat, I've been talking about since I came to Congress. I think it makes sense. I think it's better for the veterans, and it allows people to receive levels of care at appropriate institutions, and also, in my view, will help many of the smaller institutions in our communities stay viable.
We've been talking about veterans and their care, but there's also been some debate right now about the possibility of sending troops back to Iraq. Should we?
My view is absolutely not. Unless there is some compelling national interest, and no one has demonstrated that to me as yet. Secondarily, going back in there without a commitment by the current Iraqi government to make it more inclusive and a commitment from the Sunnis to participate in that government if it is opened up, we are simply investing where we will get no return on that investment. And I see no point to sacrificing more lives, more injuries, and money for that purpose.
Do you see ISIS as a direct threat to America at all?
I don't think that they're any greater threat than many of the groups that exist in the Middle East in particular, who have as one of their major goals to do damage to the United States. I'm not convinced, however, that having troops on the ground is going to solve that problem. We're going to protect ourselves, I think, by using appropriate levels of cybersecurity. I think the use of drones is appropriate. Those are the kinds of actions that I would be advocating so we don't put our troops in harm's way.
It hasn't been that long ago that we were focused on the Ukraine. Now we're focused on ISIS and Iraq. What's happened with Ukraine? It's like fallen off the edge of the earth.
Well, I think that to some extent that's true. That's also the nature of what we deal with today because of instant communication, the availability of the internet, 24-hour TV and talk shows. So we move from issue to issue very quickly. I think the Ukraine is still a potential problem. I do think, however, it has lessened as a problem to some degree, and that's due to a variety of actions and outcomes, one of which was the election in the Ukraine. I think the new president is someone who seems to be stepping up to the plate. I think he's causing the Russians to back off a little bit. I think that they seem to be gaining some traction and towards stability in Ukraine, which is clearly a great outcome. It's not a place where we want to try and become involved, nor do we want to see it devolve into some form of chaos.
Bill Owens, I want to come back to issues within the U.S. again, or sort of within the U.S. again. President Obama is planning to present Congress with an immigration package mostly focused on the U.S.-Mexico border. But my understanding is the rules that have created the problem are valid for the contiguous countries. So it's both the U.S. Mexico and U.S.-Canada border. Have you had a chance to see or take a look at the potential proposal regarding the illegal immigration and the problem with children that have cropped up lately?
I've not seen the legislation as yet, but we do know factually that the issues that exist along the Mexican border are related primarily to children coming up from Central America. This is not really a Mexican immigration issue. It's still serious, but it's not a Mexican immigration issue. We don't have that along the Canadian border. It simply doesn't exist. So whatever rules they might put into place, I don't see having a big impact on the U.S.-Canada border.
Do you think that we'll have any sort of meaningful immigration policy, or is this debate going to carry through the summer and basically be campaign fodder?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be campaign fodder. I do not believe that Republicans are prepared to move forward with meaningful immigration reform, which we clearly need to do, and to bring it home to our region. Virtually every farmer you talk to, particularly dairy farmers, will tell you we need to have immigration reform because they need that immigrant labor on the farms. So this is a theoretical problem when you talk about maybe the children coming across the border. Maybe when you talk about large groups of people of Mexican descent in communities. But where we live, there is a significant immigration problem relative to farms. We need to solve that. And unfortunately, our Republican friends absolutely refuse.
Bill, there was a small oil spill at the Port of Albany this weekend. With the debate over the oil trains, should Congress pass more stringent transport and storage rules for the Bakken oil and other forms of oil that is being transported in much greater volumes lately?
There's two levels to this. The first is, I think we need to let the existing statutes, rules, and regulations play out a little bit. I think they are actually adequate to ensuring that we have as safe as possible transport of the oil. Clearly, the big issue is how quickly you replace the DXT-111 cars. That's really the issue at this juncture from the point of view of the Bakken oil, because it is more volatile. That is really what needs to happen. And there's a bit of a fight going on between not necessarily the railroads, but actually the shippers of the oil don't want to pay to have increased the safety of the rail cars. I mean, that's really where the issue is, and I think they need to get off the dime, step up, and get it done. Now, the other side of that is, when you now look at the number of rail cars of oil coming through, you have to measure that against the safety of a pipeline. I happen to believe that there is much greater security and safety in having a pipeline than there is in oil trains, primarily because the pipelines will not go through the middle of communities the way the trains do, because that's the way the railroad tracks were laid out 150 years ago. So two levels here. I'm not inclined to see more regulation because I think, well, congressional action, other than to push the regulators to say we need safer rail cars to move that oil.
Bill Owens, I think many people know at this point that you're retiring from Congress, so you get to observe the primaries and election campaign that's happening right now in the district. Did you follow the Republican primary? And if you did, what do you make of the results?
Well, I certainly followed the results. I didn't really follow the primary that closely. All I can tell you about this is the game is now set up, if you will, between the Green Party candidate, Aaron Wolf, and the Republican primary winner. I think the key question for people has to be, will any of the candidates represent all of their constituents? And for me, that means, will they vote with the other party from time to time? And I think that's the question that people need to be asking these candidates. Are they willing on pieces of legislation that will have an impact on the district? For instance, in this district, it's fair to ask the question, in my view, will you vote for immigration reform that contains a farm labor component? If the answer to that is no, then I think that's a major issue in our community. And people can talk about being bipartisan, but the only way to actually be bipartisan is to vote periodically with the other party. I voted between 30 and 35% with my Republican colleagues because I believe that is how I represented all of my constituents. And some people might argue with that, but that's a fair question, and I think the question that has to be asked.
How liberating is it for you to do your congressional work without having to worry about a re-election campaign?
It has been, I think, very enlightening to go through this process. I think that it has certainly provided me much more time to spend thinking about issues, being able to really focus on legislation and hearings. And I found it to be a very good experience. And I think that it's one that has left me feeling very pleased about my time in Congress.
And the session starts up again in just after the 4th of July, doesn't it?
Yes, we're in for about 4 to 5 weeks in the month of July. And then the month of August, we're in recess. And then we go back again in early September.
Thanks for giving me a call.
Take care and have a great 4th of July. And allow me to say to my constituents that I wish them a happy and safe 4th of July.